Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Nothing tastes as good as a cup of Bahamian tea.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.
You are listening to the podcast Tea and Talk, presented to inform, educate, inspire, and encourage meaningful conversations on Bahamian art and culture. My name is Robert Bain, dancer, teacher, choreographer, and someone who believes in the preservation of all things Bahamian. I am sitting down with persons of like mind to discuss the Bahamian perspective on the arts and the Bahamian way. Now, let's welcome our guest.
Welcome to Tea and Talk. I am Robert Bain, and I am coming to you with another podcast, of course. This podcast is emanating from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We boast of 700 islands. 30 of them are inhabited by beautiful people. We're a beautiful country, and there are lots and lots of possibilities here in the Bahamas. Of course, this podcast was established as a platform for persons like myself, the artist, giving us some place where we can come and we can talk and we can share. We can talk about the things that impedes our development, or we can talk about the things that make it just makes it great. The music you heard in the beginning was done by Jason Ferguson. Thank you, Jason, for contributing. And the music you hear underneath is done by our Bahamian musician, Fred Ferguson. Thank you, Fred. Okay, today we're going to talk. We have a lot to talk about. And in my space is Kristen Carroll. And now, who is Kristen Carroll? Well, Kristen Carroll is the grandniece of the late Shirley Hall Bass. And Kristen is just doing a lot here in the Bahamas. She has a couple of irons in the fire, basically. She has a couple of projects. But what she's trying to do for the dance in the country is to make it better. That's all I can say, just make it better. She is responsible for the Shirley Hall Bass Legacy program, and she'll tell you about that. This summer, she had a lot going on, and for the past 6 years, she's been putting a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into making things happen here in Nassau, Bahamas. Kristen, welcome to Tea and Talk. Welcome, finally, we are together. The last time we did this was, I think it was in our first session of Tea and Talk, and we did it, you were in Chicago, and I was here in Nassau, Bahamas, and now I have you right here in the studio. So welcome to Tea and Talk, and welcome back home.
Thank you. We're in the studio where you were so gracious to let me in.
Yes.
You let me teach a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
Year. That was over 20 years ago.
That's a long time ago, eh?
Uh-huh. I was a lecturer at COB.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
I was living in Shirley's house.
Yeah.
And you opened your door to me and made a dance home for me. That was my first real space here.
Okay.
So thank you for that, Robert.
You're welcome.
And I remember so many dancers that this was the National Dance Company's home, and I met a lot of
dancers. It still is, yeah.
Lakeisha Bostwick was here at that time, dancing. And it was just wonderful. You're a real one-man show in terms of your choreography and the talent that you can identify and groom up. It's just been a blessing to know you this time, all this time. I can remember being a child because my aunt was such a, she was a showgirl, right? Kind of a show business kind of manager later in the times. And she did Crystal Palace shows. She did the Playboy Casino shows. She was responsible for Miss Bahamas pageants. And I had the great fortune of coming down every summer of my life and watching her put on shows. And I remember seeing you on stage and Lawrence Carroll and Miss Josie, Victoria Josie.
It's a long time ago, eh?
Wow. But here we are at another time where, as you know, I've been doing the Shirley Hall Bass Legacy Project with Dr. Butler, who's my co-founder, for 6 years.
Okay.
We call it the Legacy Project because there are a lot of projects here.
Okay.
We started off with a real simple film project where we wanted to sort of commemorate my aunt's memory. We invited a bunch of dancers to the house. And just in hearing their testimony and sort of the descriptions of how they came to be, how you came to be, you know, a trained dance educator, someone who's danced abroad, and that was not happening anymore.
Right.
Those were sort of dead ends because the University of the Bahamas does not offer a fine arts degree in dance or theater. And so I think what my aunt came down here with has been a subject of my research for the past, well, some would say my whole life, but because I was living with her as she was doing Independence Extravaganza in 1973. That's a thing I can remember.
Right. What do you remember about the Independence Extravaganza in 1973?
Besides Shirley yelling and screaming.
Yeah.
The big boongy woman. Okay, the big boongy woman. I was standing at the bottom of the stage, the edge of the stage, and I looked up, and I can still remember. And I don't know if it was a man in drag or if it was just one of the dancers in a very stuffed costume.
Right.
And here I am now, 50 years later, right?
Right, 51.
51 years later.
Yes.
Recognizing that what I was seeing was my aunt's research.
Okay.
Because that is a representation, that's a figure that's a part of Jamaican Junkanoo that she put on stage, which just like Catherine Dunham and Pearl Primus and Lavinia Williams, who I know you worked with.
Madam. Yeah.
Madam Lavinia Williams. These were Americans who came to the Caribbean, I believe were in full recognition of what they saw, which was their people, their African people that they'd been disassociated of or had the ballet snatched it out of them. And they came here and they were well received and welcomed and they all stayed and made homes and established schools. So my research is in part following what I've discovered, not in my aunt's narrative, but even in my own narrative.
Right.
Right? I was a ballet dancer. I came to the Bahamas. I fell in love. I've been about folkloric forms and going to Andros and learning about the ring shout that they do there and how it's related to the Gullah Sea Island people. I mean, there's just nothing but history.
Yeah.
But that big boongy woman you said, I remember from the stage. And Lawrence Carroll confirmed it. He was like, oh, yeah.
So, for those listening out there, boongy is actually what we call your behind, your derriere, your hips. We call it boongy here in the Bahamas. So, oh, big boongy woman. That's interesting.
And that's a folkloric character in the Jamaican style.
Oh.
And so I found that when I looked at my aunt's work and her history here, nobody is doing this work without research and understanding. And you are so, the book that you just wrote, right? That's a testament to your teaching. You know all. You know what I mean? You know all. It was time for you to put it in a book. So
yes.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
But so I never think that I'm just here doing these things. I feel that I'm going to New York and reading Madame Lavinia's diaries. Forgive me, Madame Lavinia. But she made very smart, clever deals by getting the Ministry of Culture and Tourism to collaborate, and Education to collaborate on her projects, which were national dance schools and companies as she started the National Dance School here.
Right, that's right. For those who don't know, Madame Lavinia Williams, came to the Bahamas in 1976, and she helped to establish the National Dance School of the Commonwealth of Bahamas. That's correct.
And right now, we can put a pin right there and say, I'm here making the noise that I'm making, doing the work that I'm doing, because the National Dance School is closed.
It's closed.
And
sad.
It's been closed since before COVID.
Yeah.
There wasn't a COVID close. It was a COVID. No, it was before COVID. So that is a devastating. That has a, there were 400 students, I think, in attendance.
There were lots of kids in that school, yeah.
And those classes were affordable.
Yeah.
Right? And so I sometimes make so much sense that I can't stand it. But listen, is it not a tourist economy?
Yeah.
is entertainment, live performance and entertainment, not valued in this tourist economy? And so why would the, not for economic reasons, but even for cultural reasons,
right,
make dance a national and important thing that we have, not just for anybody who can afford it, but in the public schools? So my main passion, my main purpose, I was a public school teacher for 20 years.
Okay.
I believe in the power of the arts, not just as a tool to trick kids into coming to school, but it works. Right. Mommy, I got to go to rehearsal. I got to get to school.
Yeah.
I have data to prove that that is increases student engagement. It's physical. A colleague of mine, Shara Goldsmith, you know Shara, she's a ballet dancer. Mm-hmm. You know Shara. I know Shara because of you. So Shara is really invested in understanding neurodivergence and dance and the relationship of learning and being not changing the ways we teach so that we can reach all students, not just the ones that sit still. So very invested in public school education. That's one of our projects. Developing national standards. That's a project. This summer we brought down five American dancers, the best dancers I've known, best teachers I've ever met in my life, and just sort of gave that to the advanced and pre-professional dancers at the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. It was right at the end of the school year, so we weren't looking for the freshman students or the sophomores. We wanted students that either had some professional training or were really beyond what you could get at a local dance school.
Right.
We brought Pierre Lockett from the Joffrey Ballet, who was originally Dance Theater of Harlem. I brought Amansu Tempero Eason, who is, when you say royalty, he is of Muntu Dance Company, which is a really well-known nationally touring company in Chicago. He's like the prince, right, of that group. For his knowledge, for his second generation, his mother was a dancer, his father was a drummer. And this man is not only that versatile in West African forms, but he's a certified Catherine Dunham instructor.
Okay.
And what I found is a lot of the Bahamian students we've been interacting with, the dancers included, they don't know Catherine Dunham. As a part of our forum, we really wanted to emphasize male dancers.
Right.
That was the focus this year because, well, the focus was diversity, right? Moving in harmony, celebrating diversity. We partnered with the Center for the Deaf. Shirley had some sort of foresight and also relationship with my deaf sister to say that why not dancing for the deaf children?
You know, that was interesting that you say that because I remember, too, there was a program at the National Dance School. It was a program that happened during the day where Ms. Bass actually took part in teaching deaf children. They came from the Center for the Deaf here in the Bahamas, and she would be the one responsible for working. As a matter of fact, there was a young lady that came. I could vaguely remember this young lady that Ms. Bass took a liking to. It was really interesting, but she did. So I now see the correlation, the relation, but she has been involved in that sort of thing. Chris, tell we're going to get to. I want to talk about your summer program. We want to do a really good postmortem on that.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us just a little bit more for those persons who don't know Shirley Old Bass, because I realize that a lot of the younger kids, just a few, don't know who Shirley Old Bass was. They don't know, some of them don't know the sacrifice that she made. They're unaware of who Shirley Bass is. Give us just briefly tell us a bit about Miss Bass.
So I would like to say that from the time I was 6 months old, I made my first trip here, and I came every summer after that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet to say I knew her would not be true, because what I know now through the research about her dance career prior to coming to the Bahamas blows my mind. The history of the legacy of the dance that really then becomes the history of the dance here in the Bahamas because she was so influential.
Right.
If you want to understand, to me, and I'm not trying to speak in a very grand way about my aunt, but she was so influential. Her history is really an early Black Broadway tradition. So I know you know Burt Williams because he's Bahamian, and I hope the audience knows Burt Williams because he's Bahamian. But he was part of the Follies and was very, was able to turn minstrelsy on its head. Mm-hmm. He was doing a lot of subtle double entendre, almost be bookie, be rabbi, kind of stabbing the white audience with double speak, right? Mm-hmm. Cast the light-skinned brother as the doofus and the darker-skinned man as the gentleman. And it was really clever. Mm-hmm. So right after that time, that Burt Williams time, came Sammy Dyer's time. And Sammy Dyer trained my aunt because his training had come in both the Chitlin Circuit, which is the black segregated theater circuit. People would tour and, you know, could not perform anywhere, so they would perform at certain houses, and that's called the Chitlin Circuit. Sammy Dyer was on the Chitlin Circuit, and he was also in these early black Broadway shows where there were all black audience performers performing for a white audience. That was the first time. That was the 20s, the early 20s. He was in a show with Josephine Baker. Mm. He really popularized the Charleston, which I think a lot of people know from 1920s movies and Bugsy Berkeley kind of, you know, gun-toting gangster movies. He popularized the Charleston as a dancing red cap. It was a tap dance that they took from the juke joints of the South and put on Broadway stage. But in 1930s, he came to Chicago because Prohibition had ended, and you can't imagine the kind of nightclub life was happening in Chicago at the end of liquor came back, right? Mm-hmm. So the demand for the kind of cabaret showgirls and the cotton club dancers and the line dancers that he had been so entrenched in New York when he was a professional dancer there, now as a slightly older man, was able to have quite the market. I have a lot of evidence that says now that he was the original choreographer for the Palmer House Abbotiers. That was a very nationally well-known chorus line of white women. I have a picture signed of him from the lead abbotier, Miss Abbotier herself, to the best tap teacher and choreographer. Okay. Now, that's like 1933. So he eventually established his own dance school on the south side of Chicago, and he picked five young girls, and Shirley Hall Bass was one of them.
Okay.
And that was a very intentional training and preparation. They went on tour with Sammy Davis Jr. when they were in high school, and Shirley first came to the Bahamas, and this is all new information, in 1952, February. I have the picture of the wire that they sent back to Chicago saying they had arrived here safely.
Okay.
1952 with Louis Armstrong, was performing, and they were the opening act for a lot of black headliners. I think Shirley fell in love with the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. I think she was 17 and came down with, I mean, what a phenomenal life, right? And then later actually knew Freddie Munnings through Duke Ellington's band, where Shirley had danced and done her shiny stockings and her satin dolls, which are dances that I'm reconstructed and put on museum stages. That was very exciting. Past 2 years we've done that. The choreography that she was doing was both this early black Broadway tradition. It was both inspired by the vaudeville and Chitlin circuit, you know. It's really unique and special. And most particularly, and I think a Bahamian audience will appreciate this, especially those who might remember the shows, there's an Afro-diaspora tradition of spinning a story on its head. We do it in our dance. The cakewalk in the South is taking a very fancy European, you know, minuet, and throwing your skirt up at it and shaking a tail feather. It really, we have a way of signifying, right? Throwing things back. And Shirley took a tradition of signifying and always would have not the Mikado, but the swing Mikado. That was Sammy Dyer's version of the Mikado in a 1938 WPA project that went up in New York. Shirley did My Man Pan instead of Peter Pan,
right?
Cindy instead of Cinderella. A lot of her stories were, and in a way, sort of taking back. She did Peter Pan right before Independence, but she did Black Magic in 1974.
I've heard of that, yeah.
So I think it's about reflecting the culture. If you're a really good choreographer, creative, you're just a mirror. You're just giving back what is shown to you. Maybe you're putting it on a stage. Maybe you're adding a costume to it. But I think Shirley was really receptive when she was living here and in love with the culture and the creativity and just had the skills that had been imparted to her as you impart to your students so explicitly to make a show happen.
You know, it was what was interesting about her being here too. I think she came at a time, a very important time, when it was almost a, I think dance had existed in some form, culturally, but theatrically, it was kind of a wavering. It wasn't, you know, wasn't here or there. But she came, when she came here, she met a, basically there was almost a blank slate, and so she was able to add something there, help to create what will be, what be, excuse me, what we can record, what we can now see today. Her, some of the stuff that she left us is still here. People, a lot of Bahamians still do stuff. They don't know where it comes from. They have no definition. They don't understand it. But she brought a lot. So she came in at a time when we actually needed her. We needed her to help us, because I didn't know where we were going. I don't know. I mean, I know there were shows at the Cat and Fiddle and Zanzibar and all that sort of thing. But in terms of putting definition and helping us to move forward, I think she was a great part of that. She played a great role in that. Of course, later on, we had Mr. Farrington also, who also made a cont, who did a lot as well. But she came here, and what she did was she brought an awareness, and she allowed Bahamians to see parts of themselves that they would have never seen.
The legend of Sammy Swain, I think, is a really good example.
Well, Sammy Swain, I don't know how much she did in Sammy Swain. I think she did the in 1985, the Queen, the Queen thing. Prior to that, it was Alex Zabin, and then it was myself. But no, she, Ms. Bass, as I know her, because we both taught at the National Dance School, and I hadn't met her. I think one time ago I came from New York and I met her in Grand Bahama. So she also had an influence in Grand Bahama as well. They were doing some production in Grand Bahama and they brought her there and I met her. But it was for a short while and she didn't. I came in, I saw the rehearsal, I rehearsed with them. And apparently I wasn't there to stay. And she wanted to know where I disappeared to. Well, I had to go back to New York. And so they relayed that story to her. But she, Ms. Bass, made a ginormous contribution to the arts, to the dance here in the country, and she was multifaceted. And you know, it was not only the dance; it was the how she combined the drama and all the other things and the acrobatics and all that. So she was just multi talented, and so all of that she offered to Bahamas. A lot of gymnastics people that are involved in gymnastics, teach gymnastics, had it was influenced too by Shirley Earle Bass. She did a lot, and I don't know how many Bahamians realize the contribution that she has made to this country. But we knew how much she made when she left us, and there was a big gap, and there was a big void, and that's when people start to realize the impact that she actually had. You know,
I think there's something to be said, like as versatile as she was, there in development of our organization, we came up with a logo that had like seven dancing legs, you know, because Shirley had her foot in everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there was entertainment, there was education. She taught at Government High for many years,
she
know, taught dance at Government High. She at the same time was doing professional shows like the Crystal Palace or whatever, those tourist commodities. She participated in liturgical dance. I was like, Shirley, what weren't you not? And even the Bahamas Dance Theater School, that's a community school.
Yeah.
That isn't about to make a ballerina absolute a prima. It could, but it's really for the community. Mm-hmm. And this is what I think Shirley was best at. It wasn't about dance for the elite or dance for that could pay, people could pay for it. It was really about using dance to teach culture.
And
commitment and responsibility.
Yeah.
And community. Right? When I go to see Bahamas Dance Theater, it's the same group of people. They are so wholly committed. When I talked to the students from 1978 that did West Side Story at Government High, but then it went on to be a professional production at Dundas, that class is still connected. I was just talking to a gentleman.
As a matter of fact, I think it was because of her. I think she was the first person, the first dance teacher at Government High School. I think she was the one that started the program at Government High School. And then after that, the other teachers came in, like Edna Wright, and then Victoria Josie came there. And then my last 2 years as a teacher, I spent at Government High myself. So it was really good to be mentioned in the same breath as Shirley Hill Bass. You know, Ms. Bass taught here at the school. You know, she was the one that, so I'm happy to be mentioned in the same breath. But she did her, what you are doing, Chris, and you and Faith and the organization here, what you guys are doing here is just amazing. I think it's deserving. I think more need to happen like that in terms of Ms. Bass recognizing her contribution to this existence. You know, her contributions to the Bahamas, not only Bahamas, but Chicago, basically the world. And so there are others, and we want others too to be recognized. But at this point, you have picked up the mantle, and you are, and hopefully this will just hopefully start an avalanche of something, you know. But let's go back to the actual project, Shirley Hall Bass Legacy Project.
Mm-hmm.
What at the end of the day, what is it that you hope to achieve with the project itself?
So at this point, Robert, one of the things I will say is we've expanded beyond dance.
Okay.
And we are inclusive of all performing arts.
Okay.
That is both because it's a small community and we need strength, power, and numbers. You know that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you really think about it, in music, there is rhythm, and in dance, there is rhythm. Mm-hmm. There is always about a creative product or process, or these things are all related. They're common to performing arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to be able to support and really uphold, but through equity and through an access that I don't see here right now.
Yeah.
And so when we say we have a comprehensive plan for performing arts education, I think that's the tidiest thing to say.
Okay.
For me, that looks like a lot of different areas, though. We have to have a BA program at the university.
Yeah.
Akitha Carey is working on that, right?
Okay.
We've been very supportive of that process. You were part of that advisory team. And if you don't push here in the Bahamas, you know how it is. Everything's hurricane, anything. You have to push to get things done.
Right.
Shirley taught me how to push.
Right.
And I'm grateful for that, you know, skill. So we are definitely making progress in that area. I met with Minister Hannah Martin today. I won't say more than that, but
Right. That's
about public school.
Right.
What should every child be able to know and do in the fine and performing arts? Because here's the thing. It does give them the opportunity to be confident. It does give them the opportunity to collaborate. And in this country now, how about some conflict resolution?
Right?
How about learning how to collaborate and have a strong sense of identity? So if someone says something funny about your sneakers, you're not ready to pop off because you have more to yourself than that.
Right.
Because you have an identity and a culture that you've learned primarily through exploring your own performing arts.
Right.
It's a simple proposal, but it has to be from kindergarten through tertiary education, because let's be real, they could establish a degree program at UB, but if a child isn't exposed to it from primary school into secondary school, who's going to want to go?
It's a waste, right?
Who's going to be ready to go? Who's going to even think to go?
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's important, the work that Nico Bethel has been doing in such a committed way of having shows, even without the main stage open, they're still, I saw phenomenal. I laughed out loud, man. I was a great show at the Dundas Black Box last month.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to her for doing that work. I saw another production at the PAC Center two nights ago. Theater is a real thing here.
Yeah.
But when I ask the Ministry of Education, and I shall not name any names, what about theater? The answer was they read Shakespeare. Now that's a play, true, but it's not light design. It's not costumes. It's not building or managing the house, or it's not the stage manager. It's not. These are all jobs, though. And aren't we in a tourist economy where those are jobs?
Yeah.
And it makes me sad. Patrice Francis is a phenomenal playwright. Mr. Ferguson, who's playing your music, he did the show at Atlantis.
Atlantis, yeah.
Right? Junkanoo in Paradise. That's the first show in 25 years at that level by Bahamians. To me, I'm offended, right? I wasn't even born here. And maybe Shirley's rolling over in her grave because the native shows she did were phenomenal and high quality because Bahamians are talented. Why would you bus a show in from New York or Vegas when you have so much talent here?
Yeah.
And it's just a deficit to me in the investment in education. But that's not what Hannah Martin says. She says she's fully invested, so we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
But really, there's a lot of support here. There's a lot of valuing of culture, but I don't see it implemented where it's available and accessible in public schools. So that's the main objective of the project. But then I would have to say, what do you do in the meantime? We don't have certified dance educators coming out of UB. We don't have certified drama teachers coming out of UB. And if I asked you to spend $100,000 to send your child to Canada to get a dance degree, would you? I wouldn't, right? So if you want performing arts to continue in this country, you must have it at UB where it's affordable, right? We're partnering with a regional scholar who you met, DeGrasse Johnson, Dr. Right. DeGrasse Johnson, yes. Brilliant woman who really understands the relationship between culture and dance. She articulates it in a way that I can't even say, but it's really that, here's my favorite thing. How long did they ban the Burma Junkanoo after the Burma Road riots? I ask this a lot to show something, right? Mm. We don't know. We don't know our history.
Well, if you want the history of that, you can get it.
You can get it, but they don't teach that in the schools. No. But think about what they're learning, though. The British took the time to ban Junkanoo. That means your dance and your culture are pretty powerful.
Yeah.
They banned classical Indian dancing in India. The British had a plan, and it was to take your culture from you, so that they could colonize you and take advantage. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that as a young country, as young as 50 years, 51 years, you'd want to take your culture back.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing, we still need to have conversation on culture, on what it is. There's so much that we don't know. We don't have the slightest knowledge. Some of us, we don't know what dance is. We see it. We know it's entertainment. We know costuming. We know lighting. We know some things. We have some ideas, but that's the superficial part of it. But there's a depth to dance education. There's a depth to learning dance. There's a depth to it where it affects a whole. Can affect the whole population. It can affect the development of a child. It can affect aspects of life that we don't really think about. And it's up to us, to the next generation, I should say, to try and make that happen. That people understand what it is. People are not going to support anything that they don't have a clue of what it is. What you're doing right now is that you are opening the book, and if they don't want to read it, you're reading it for them so that they understand. You know what I mean? But people need to understand what the dance is all about, how it affects the culture, in one aspect, and the other aspect, it has a lot of holistic values that persons need to understand, And how do we get them to understand that? How do we get them to buy into it? How do we get them to just want to change the narrative of how things have been done over the past couple of years? I guess at the end of the day, you will tell us how to do that, or you will point us in the right direction, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. I hope that makes sense there.
Yeah, no, it's about the hot language is culturally responsive,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I'm not going to come and pour into you what I think you're supposed to know,
right?
Mm-hmm. I'm inviting you to share with me who you are so you are invested in this community, be it a classroom community.
Right.
You trust me because now I've inquired about you and your culture, and I value you and your culture, and I want to include you right. and your culture in this space because you're important. You might be different.
Yeah.
As we all are, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm a teacher, the arts are the greatest way for me to incorporate culture into my classroom.
Exactly, yes.
To excite children through the recognition of their own forms. I've been doing professional development for the past 2 weeks with Ministry of Education.
Okay.
These teachers get it. They just don't know that they should. A noisy classroom is a great classroom if they're talking excitedly about their work, if they're exchanging ideas, or if they're singing and they're dancing because they're breathing and they're self-regulating, and then they're sitting back down and they're knuckling down for 20 minutes. I had a pretty good audience. They believed me. We sang and we danced. That's a practice. Because children should not be sitting in a chair for 6 or 7 hours a day. That's completely bizarre. Right?
Yeah.
Not cool. And if you have some training in methodologies around which you're, here's another science example. Remember the sponge that we used to use for Junkanoo?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to her? Mm-hmm. Environmental disaster. Oh, wait, that impacts our culture.
Yes.
Our environment impacts our culture. That's a big lesson.
Yeah.
That's a life lesson, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So everything, Arlene Nash has this beautiful poster where in the center is Junkanoo, and she's diagrammed all the way around it, all of the things that are related and associated to that. Jobs, economy, management, just critical thinking skills, money management, organization. So it's whether or not you have the tools, the lens, the methodology to see that every teacher in this school system has the power to teach the arts. They just think that teaching the arts means putting on tap shoes and doing it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's just not that serious.
Right.
You can show a video, show them a Junkanoo, and show them a Brazilian carnival and ask the kids to compare and contrast.
Yeah.
And isn't that the same thing we're doing in school when we read a text?
Yeah.
Or we compare and contrast? If I ask you about the theme for Junkanoo last year, do you remember Color's theme last year, or Saxon's theme? The children understand theme. So now when I'm reading your essay, I don't know if you're sticking to the theme.
Okay.
Right? You know what I mean, theme,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that's cultural competency in teaching. I'm
right.
using language and concepts that are familiar to all to make what's relevant and important for them to understand.
Beautiful. Wow. Well, it's a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff. I'm impressed with what you're doing. Like I always say, I'm here to support you in any way that I can, because I believe in the arts. I believe in it in the way it affects the human development, societal development.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in it for many, many reasons. And, and just what can come from it. So, you know, I'm here to support. I'm here to try and continue the work of Hubert Farrington, Shirley Bass, and Clement Bethel, and Mita Cumberbatch,
Cleophas Adderley,
and Cleophas Adderley.
Yeah,
you know, it is important. We cannot allow. I mean, how many persons out there know, for example, that the Prime Minister?
Are you going to talk about it right now on the radio?
No, shouldn't I not?
I don't know. This is why we did the male dance panel. Men dance too, including.
Okay.
Including.
Yes.
Go ahead and say it.
Yes, Lyndon Pinling.
He danced too. He had a whole dance. He was with the company nearly, right?
He was with Bosco Holder Dance Company.
There it is.
As a student in London, I was becoming a lawyer. So that tells you his interest in the arts. He was exposed to it. I learned of late too that he played the piano, and I understand he played it beautifully. You know, so lots of things. And so somebody said something to him. Somebody told him something. And he realized the importance of all of this, what the benefits of the arts. And I think when it came down to supporting the arts in this country, he was quite open to it.
We, for this year's forum, showed a film about Rex Nettleford from Jamaica.
Rex Nettleford, yes.
And wow, what an interdisciplinary genius that was.
Amazing man.
Right?
Amazing man.
And so to be a scholar, to be a historian, to be an academic, and then to be able to create at that level,
mm-hmm.
there are very, very, very rare people this way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what I like to balance out in my shtick, in what I'm saying is really necessary, is that while there are brilliant stars and incredible talents, Courtney Spears, Lee Bahamas, lucky you all, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are also everyday children that benefit greatly from the opportunity to move, to celebrate their culture, to think outside the box, to see a variety of movements and gestures that might not be familiar to them, but then make them think about other movements and gestures that can be liberating. That's what you were talking about. Like, I don't know what it is. It's your identity and your culture, the way you move, the way your mother puts her hand on her hip when mm-hmm. she's upset. I mean, that's who we are as a people.
Yeah.
Right? So, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, there's so much, Kristen, that we can talk about. But you know, for now, I'm happy that you're here in the Bahamas. I'm happy that you decided to come and just stay some time with us instead of just coming in and leaving. Because just recently, I was quite taken back with you when we had that experience out at Life at Key area.
Oh, the ballet.
And you showed up here. You came in here and just landed on the island and made sure that this was taken care of. And then you packed up and went back.
And I went home.
How does she do it?
Shirley taught me. That's, I'm going to tell you like it is. I cannot believe the intentionality with which Shirley taught me. Mm. Ralph McKinney taught me. Mm. Ralph McKinney is one of Shirley's students that still packs up the Olympians and takes them on tour and picks them up. Mm. She taught production and organization and planning. And to have the opportunity to take, you're talking about Iconique. Mm. We had tickets to see, the free tickets to see the dress rehearsal. Mm. I bought some buses and we took 50 kids from 12 different dance schools.
That, to me, you don't realize the imprint that you've left on those children as a result of that. You know, the organization, just having it, you know. And I realized anything that could benefit the dance in this country, it's Chris is there, and I appreciate that a whole lot. And like I told you the other day, I see you. I really do see you. I see what you're doing. I see the work. And I appreciate your spirit. I really appreciate your spirit, and like I say always, I'm here to help as best as I can. I might not be the easiest person in the world, but I am here to help because I see what you're doing. I see you, and you know. But Kristen, before we wrap up, let's tell us a bit more, because I know you. I mean, you're really knitted into education. But tell us some of the ways that the dance benefit children.
Oh my goodness! Here we go. Let's get started.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to start where we were this year, and it was around diversity.
Okay.
And that we all learn differently. Some children are auditory processors. Some children are very tactile. Mm-hmm. Some children, you know, we have these incredible things called mirror neurons. So when I watch you doing something, I'm actually learning vicariously by watching you do it. Movement in the classroom engages all of those opportunities mm-hmm. so that you're not just teaching to the child that holds a pencil and stays focused and quiet. You're able to engage the whole child, mind, body, and spirit, more often than not. Brain research shows that a child can focus and listen to you, even adults, for about 8 minutes. And then if you don't give them a chance to respond, to ask a question, to move, to raise a hand, even to laugh, right, you've lost them. You may as well stop talking. So if you have an understanding of a student's physiology, their biology, you would very easily want them to move every 20 minutes, right? And that learning then is not just necessarily, oh, and we go crazy and we go wild. My practice is that learning is also embedded into the movement, right? You're learning the difference between pantomime, gesture, dance. There's all these different concepts that, like with the example that I gave earlier, sometimes it's about parallel processes. I know, unfortunately, most of us were drilled in the writing process. We had to brainstorm and draft and edit and revise and then publish, right?
Right?
We teach kids that all the way through school. I don't know why we have to keep teaching it over and over, because when you're in my class, we create a dance. And first we brainstorm, and then we plan it, the draft, and then we revise the dance, and then we publish it on stage. And the kids understand, I think you need to revise your paper. And it's just about having common ideas. If I talk to you about the elements and principles of dance, and I'm talking about jumping, skipping, walking, running, twisting, bending, shake. Those are verbs, right? So you can teach parts of speech using sign language, gets the whole body moving and the brain going. You can teach categorization. You can teach math as fractions, as I know in the Bahamas they use that for music and fractions. But mostly I really want to reinforce the use of the arts for social and emotional learning.
Okay.
That is self-regulation. That is, how do I feel? Do I know how I feel? Now that I know how I feel, what I'm going to do about my feelings? I'm different than you, and so how do I navigate those differences without being violent or angry? These are interpersonal skills, right? You have intrapersonal skills. How confident am I, right? If you put a child, I saw your show. Those babies were on stage. They were confident,
okay. And
they had practiced being confident. When I ask the Ministry of Education teachers how many of you have spelling bees, everybody's hands go up. But you and I remember the stress of that, right?
Yeah.
To be looked at, to be made to think. Some kids are good at it, but a lot aren't. What if you could prepare them? How would you prepare them? What about dance? What about having half the kids sit down and the other half stand up? And now I'm confident. I'm confident on stage and in presentation. Mm. right? Giving the students an opportunity. In the arts, there's an opportunity for voice and choice.
Voice and choice.
If I do a sad dance, it's not going to look like your sad dance, right? And so now that's a conceptual thing. I'm not going to give you a report. I'm going to give you my opinion.
Okay.
That's a conceptual development that you can come through dance. But around the social emotional learning, I'm talking about confidence. I'm talking about commitment. I know from the data from my work with Joffrey Ballet, the kids who participate come to school. They know what a lesson it is. Wow, you're better at that than you were before. How'd you get better? I practiced. Oh, you want to get better at math? What should you do?
Practice.
Practice. Mm-hmm. These are lessons around commitment, right? So children learn by doing. We could say that. Some do, right? And we also learn through analogy and comparison and higher order thinking skills. The arts, it's not just do what I say, do what I do. No. There's a reason for that. You're putting your heels down in plié so you don't tear the little muscles in your shin. You point your feet when you jump to roll through the feet. So there's physics in ballet.
Yeah.
Right? If you want to talk about a higher level and you want to talk about representation, you could take a text like Othello, Shakespeare. You could take the ballet Othello. You could take a movie Othello and you could start comparing and contrasting the choices that the directors made in representation.
Right.
Or interpretation. And that, I think, might engage a student a little more than a workbook or a worksheet, right? To be in discourse and dialogue over something as engaging as that. So that's preschool through grad school. There's lots of examples. Like, show me your understanding of the four stages, the three stages of water, frozen, liquid, gas, right? Show me that in movement. Whole class, go, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you
mm-hmm.
close together? It's cold.
Yeah.
They can evidence. And you can also see who's not feeling good that day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, huh? Yeah, I would say, I remember a couple of years ago, I was teaching at one of the government high schools, and I had these graphic things on the ground, these numbers, like I have in here now. But I had them done in some strange way. I can't remember why. But a teacher came into the studio one day, and she goes like, oh, I need to tell the math teachers about this, because we can teach the kids how to do their grids and stuff and show them actually how this thing works. I've had also the experiences of teaching a child about the digestive system using dance. And if you can do it in a certain way, whenever they sit down and they start to think of that process, they're going to always remember the movement that represented a particular thing, and they'll never forget it.
That's right.
Persons don't understand that concept. But thanks to you, I'm hoping that I'm sure you would have expressed some of these ideas and some of these realities, things that can possibly happen by using the arts and using some concepts of the arts. But I hope that you have gotten that through. But that has been my experience. And I remember I had a teacher here one time ago, Patsy Ricketts from Jamaica, and we were talking, having the same conversation, and she was talking about teaching the heart, and I was like, really? And so she started to explain it to me, and mm-hmm. I go like, and so there are kids who were in the studio that particular day would never forget that experience in the class, because she was explaining to them. I can't remember it, but she was explaining it to them, but they will never ever forget that process of how the heart works and, mm-hmm. and the pumping and how the blood goes this way, and you know, it's just an amazing process. And mm-hmm. I would like for people here, teachers here in the Bahamas, to realize it, that it can work together. Kristen, now I know you have a second love. I know when you come here, you get involved in Junkanoo.
Mm.
I know you have a thing with Junkanoo.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your experience and exposure to Junkanoo.
I will start by saying, because I came here every summer of my life, mm-hmm. I miss Junkanoo. Okay. I remember Gumbe summer, I remember some of that, but I really had not, until I was an adult, was teaching at COB, and Krista Stillian, who had been my aunt's music arranger at the Playboy.
Oh, Krista's got an award, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, I think some government award.
He's deserving if he did, I'm telling you.
Congratulations, Krista.
Thank you, Chris. He knew my aunt. I think he must have known her well for the musical relationship they had at Playboy for so many years. Mm-hmm. And he asked if I would choreograph for his new group. Mm-hmm. And his new group was Colors.
Yeah.
I had not the contextual understanding to know that college professors did not typically rush. Mm-hmm. That was not a typical thing. But Dr. Butler was my colleague. We were co-teaching courses. And in fact, we were co-teaching class on music and dance mm-hmm. in the classroom. And we invited our students to join with us in this rush. And so we had a very UB or COB at the time, a group of dancers. And we added tulle skirts because, you know, I was a ballet dancer. And I liked the way the tulle bounced and rocked. And Chris had such a unique and deep appreciation for Junkanoo, not just as like a competition and we're going to win. That's not what that is to him. Mm-hmm. It's a community. It's about learning and teaching and learning and sharing. And Cash is one of my freshmen in educational studies. She's still with the group, and it's been 20 some years. You know, she's also a principal. Go get it. Mm. And so that type of encouragement, that's what people need in their lives, right? Mm. We need to eat nutritious food. We need access to clean water. We also need a community. You know. And something positive. So the first time I rushed, we were doing sun and water, completely gold or completely blue. We built our own costumes. I have a theater background, so a hot glue gun was nothing for me to balk at. And I did the choreography based on, again, the research that I'd been doing and the dances that I learned from my aunt. I think Maureen Duvalier is really somebody that we need to explore more when it comes to Junkanoo and women on on Bay Street.
Yeah, 1958. Yeah. She brought her with Josh Simonet and some other persons brought Junkanoo to Bay Street. But what is your opinion of Junkanoo in terms of its connection to the motherland, to Africa?
Okay. So I got to go to Africa in 2019. It was the year of the return. A lot of people went back to Africa to check it out. And it was amazing because it was the Bahamas.
Okay.
My head was turning right and left for faces that I knew. And I am not saying Bahamians look all alike. There are like 13,000 types of Bahamians. And I saw them all in Ghana. Mm-hmm. Everyone looked like somebody I knew. Mm-hmm. The food was similar. And I've told you this, Robert, Winneba, Ghana. I encourage your audience to Google it. Winneba, Ghana. It's called the fancy dress dancing. And it's Junkanoo. Right? So for me, what I would say is I grew up in the 70s. My daddy was like a wannabe Black Panther. My mother was into African art and sculpture. And so I was always looking for, well, where's our people? Where's our people? And I think Shirley empowered me in a way by understanding these people. And then when I went to Africa, I've realized, oh, y'all, we are those people.
Mm-hmm.
All of us, we are those people. The Garifuna, who came and had a little isolation for a while, kept their traditions. I did research in Red Bay's Andros to look at their traditions of basket weaving and rushing, and it's very specifically West African. And that's not new research, but I don't think Bahamians have had the compare and contrast experience where it is shocking, right, how similar the food, the language, and certainly Winneba, Ghana, fancy dress dancing. It is, because there were different colonizers, everyone's going to have a sort of different influence. But in Ghana, they had the English too. So there are horns in their fancy dress dancing.
Yeah.
There's fringe in their fancy. There are lines. There's competition. Whereas the Junkanoo in Jamaica really looks like it has more of a Catholic influence. And it's parish-based. And it's very different, right?
Yeah.
So all of those very interesting factors excite my mind. But when I tell you I've done 2 laps, and I did 2 laps again after that, and the place that I found myself after the second lap was a transcendental place.
Okay.
It was a truly, every time, it was, and it was after the fire, and there's something about the hardship of being cold. I know it's the Bahamas, but when you're soaking wet from rushing, it's cold, and you've got to stand near the fire. And then you go again, and somewhere between that starting again and the finish, I was not there. It was, and I don't know, maybe when I was dancing in the house clubs in Chicago in the 90s, you know, 80s really, yeah. Right? That when you dance all the way to freedom.
Yeah. I thought I would bring that up because I know you are so much involved in Junkanoo, and that is a very intricate part of our culture. And I figure there are some things that you probably could, point out that we don't see, a lot of persons don't see. If you read my book, Profiles of Bahamian Dance, The Dance and the Dancers, I kind of talk about it a little bit from my perspective, how I saw it as a young man growing up, being a Junkanoo myself. I haven't rushed in many years. Time has become a problem. There's a lot of Junkanoo needs to be studied. I don't think it's being studied the way it should be. Mm-hmm. I don't think people understand what it is that they need to look at, or mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't think we've reached back far enough into Africa to understand. I know Keith Wisdom's dissertation. I've read Nico's dad's work. Mm-hmm. Your book has covered Junkanoo. There's a lot of light scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that the Prime Minister's son has been going to Africa on trips to do some connecting. I think that what needs to continue.
Yeah, he deals with the Ahanta tribes, which is really interesting in West Africa. Mm-hmm. I had him on. He did a podcast with us at some time, him and Angelique McKay.
Let's all go to Winneba. Yeah, yeah. That's what I want to do. Yeah. I want to get a trip together where, just as we're developing the standards, there would be an expert in cloth. Hey, Pamela Burnside. There would be an expert in dance. Hello. There would be an expert in music. Hey, Chris Justillian. And we would go and with our eyes. We wouldn't even just to observe and then have discussion about what we saw.
Well, let's talk about that.
That's a goal.
Let's talk about that. Kristen, it's so good to have you here in this space in Dance Bahamas. This is my studio, right?
I used to teach here. I was pregnant with my Bahamian son right here.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. Back in, that was a while ago. But mm-hmm. we're now in our 23rd year. Mm-hmm. 24. Actually, this year's our 24th year. We've been here in this space. People say, why don't we have a building? Well, people need to support the arts a little bit more.
Right.
And then probably we'll have that space. We're tired of just getting the little drizzles. You know, we need some real funding so we can actually have a real place. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a student right now away in Tennessee. And I spoke to the mom today, and she was talking about this building that they drove up to, and it was just amazing and out of this world, and why don't we have one of those in the Bahamas? Yeah. You know, so hopefully one day we will. But Kristen, I love you. I'm always happy to see you. I'm always happy when you call. And I just wanted to just sit and just talk with you a little bit, and because this is too, this podcast is one of the ways that persons get to learn, who we are as Bahamian. We get to learn of what's happening in the country. They get to learn what's happening in education, which is an area. Well, you're multifaceted yourself. You're like your aunt. You're an educator. You're a dancer.
I'm a director.
You're a director.
That's the new title.
Exactly.
That's the Goodman Theater. I had no idea.
We're
directing at the Goodman Theater. Thank you, Aunt Shirley. Yes, it's been amazing.
Yeah, so this is where people come to learn. Hopefully this will become a reservoir. These podcasts will be able to help and give people insight.
For that reason, can I just say a couple names?
Sure.
I couldn't do any of this work without Dr. Faith Butler.
There you go.
You know that, right? I got to thank Char Goldsmith, your ballerina, that you let me choreograph that Sugar Plum Fairy business years ago. Char is a phenomenal educator and dance educator and a great soul.
Yeah.
Incredible. Dr. Maria Oriaki from the University of the Bahamas.
Okay.
None of these summer projects could happen without her.
Good.
And Dr. Ian Strong, also at the vice president's office. What a good ear. What a committed thespian and artisan.
Yeah.
Pamela Burnside, right? I have such incredible people holding my back, and all you Bahamas Dance Theater people out there.
There you go.
Thank you. Everyone has been supporting us greatly.
Well, Kristen, thank you for all that you do here in this country. Thank you very much for all that you do. This is Tea and Talk. Like I say, this podcast is emanating from the Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We both boast of 700 islands. 30 of them are inhabited by beautiful people. And today's a beautiful day. It's hot out there, eh?
It was warm.
It was warm. But it's a beautiful day anyway. All right. So until the next time, Kristen, thank you for being on the podcast today. And we will be back soon with another podcast. You're listening to Tea and Talk.
You're listening to the podcast, Tea and Talk.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.